Now you have something new to think about.
Yes, I do. But I still don't like hiding who I am.
I understand. New friends share their hopes and dreams, and you naturally want to help them. You want to give them advice and tell them where you've been and what you've seen. It is a difficult thing to find ourselves trapped between what we want to do and what we have to do.
It seems foolish, all this sneaking around, Alex said, looking into the night sky. Jabez will know when we are close to him, so why bother trying to sneak up on him?
He will only know when I get close,
Waylon said.
He won't know you for what you are until he sees you. Possibly not even then. We've talked about that.
Yes, Alex said, unsure if Waylon was right or not. If we remain together, however, he will know when we approach. Waylon didn't reply, and soon it sounded like he had gone to sleep. Alex remained gazing up at the sky. His thoughts weren't on the stars or on the lie that he had to live. His thoughts were far away on a hidden island where Salinor, the oldest of all dragons, maybe the oldest of all living things, made his home. Was it the fact that Alex was part dragon that was making it hard for Waylon and perhaps impossible for Jabez to see him for what he was? Was the magic of dragons so different than the magic of wizards? Alex wasn't sure, even though he'd used both wizard and dragon magic. Perhaps Salinor would be able to tell him. It happened slowly, but eventually Alex's mind seemed to leave the circle of wagons behind, drifting back across the sea to Eastland. He let his thoughts go, knowing where they would lead him and hoping for an easy answer. His thoughts moved quickly over the water, but not any water in Jarrow. After a time, Alex found himself standing near the secret cave on the Isle of Bones, calling out in his dragon voice to his friend.
You have traveled far in thoughts,
Salinor said, his giant silver head lifting as he looked at Alex.
I have questions, Alex said, unsure if he dared ask them.
Yes, I can see that. I see your mind more clearly than your wizard friend, and I understand it better.
Then you already know what I would ask.
Yes,
Salinor answered, his voice deep and thoughtful as always.
Dragon magic and wizard magic are both the same and different, though not in the ways you might think.
Then is there a way? Is there a way I can hide myself and my power from another wizard?
You already know the answer is yes,
Salinor said, his giant head tilting to one side as he spoke.
You still think with the mind of a man, so you do not see things as clearly as a dragon would. If you thought like a dragon, you would already know the answers to your questions.
But I don't know how to think like a dragon. All my life I've thought like a human.
There have been times when you acted without thinking. You knew what to do by instinct alone, and at those times you were very close to thinking as a dragon.
Yes, I remember. Can you help me? Help me to think like a dragon but remain a man?
I can help you, though it will be difficult, as I have never thought like a man,
Salinor replied with a booming laugh.
Let us begin.
Chapter 8. Across Midland. The next morning, Alex woke early. He had learned a great deal from Salinor, but he still had a long way to go in his learning. He knew now that there was a way for him to hide himself from another wizard, but it wouldn't be easy. He had to practice thinking like a dragon, letting go the ifs and whens of human thought, and living more in the moment. Living in the moment was how Alex thought of dragons, but there was more. Dragons lived each moment as if that moment was all that mattered. At the same time, however, dragons looked at the future and the past as they were also part of the moment. Alex had a difficult time thinking of the future and the past as part of the present moment. It became harder still when thinking about what might happen in the future seemed more important to him than what had happened in the past. There was little time for Alex to practice his dragon thinking. The caravan was preparing to move. He and Waylon ate breakfast with the rest of the company and then organized their wagons. Alex had been assigned to ride north with Lupo and half a dozen others. They were to scout the road ahead to make sure the path was clear and that there were no bandits that might attack the caravan. This far south, bandits were not a large concern, but Alex kept his eyes open just the same. By midday, they had ridden several miles north of the caravan. There was little to report. The road was good and there were no signs of bandits. Alex and the others stopped to eat in the early afternoon, and Lupo asked Alex to tell them one of the stories he'd heard about adventurers. Alex wasn't sure what to say and would have preferred not to tell any story at all. The other members of the scouting group joined Lupo in calling for a story, however, so Alex told them the first part of his own first adventure. He was careful to make sure it sounded like a story he had heard and not something he had actually done. By the time they had finished their meal, Alex had gotten as far as his first battle with the three-legged troll and the discovery of the troll's cave. Lupo and the others thought the story was a good one and made Alex promise to tell them the rest when there was time. Alex agreed, but he wasn't happy about it. His feelings about living a lie had not changed, and the story he had just told felt like the biggest lie of all. "I've been told that trolls often keep large amounts of treasure," Lupo said as they started riding north again. "The story says there was a fair amount of treasure in the troll's cave," Alex said. "Still, stories often say more than is true."
"And sometimes less," one of the men with them commented.
"You tell the story well," Lupo said, glancing at Alex as they rode. "You made me feel like I was there with the young adventurer."
"And glad to be here in the warm sun," another of the men joked. "A three-legged troll is nothing to laugh about, not if you've ever seen one."
"Have you ever seen one?" Lupo asked, looking over his shoulder at the man.
"I've seen trolls with two legs, and that is more than enough," the man answered. "I've heard that a troll with three legs is both meaner and faster than a troll with two."
"A two-legged troll moves fast enough," another man said with a laugh.
"Are there many trolls in Midland?" Alex asked. "I've never seen any, but I've heard stories," Lupo said. "Some stories say that the trolls travel in bands, while others claim that they are slaves to the goblins." "Are there goblins in Midland?" Alex asked, remembering his encounters with the evil creatures. "Not that I know of," Lupo said, glancing around to see if any of the men knew differently. "The stories about goblins come mostly from Westland, which is one of the reasons there is so much trouble there now." "I would guess so," Alex said. "Many stories of adventure involve goblins, and from what I've heard, they are a terrible enemy to face."
"Well, we shouldn't have to worry about that," Lupo said. "The worst we are likely to meet are bandits, and I would hope only small numbers of them."
They rode through the afternoon. Now and then, two or three of them would ride to a nearby hill so they could get a better view of the land around them. About 3 hours after they had eaten, they started looking for a campsite. Alex thought this could be difficult because they had to have space for all the wagons and horses in the caravan, but it proved easy to find. They happened upon a large meadow, and it was clear that many caravans had traveled this way before. The main caravan came into view as the sun was setting. The movement of the caravan was well planned, and Lupo explained how it worked to Alex as they waited at the campsite. Each morning, riders left the caravan to scout the road ahead. If there was anything to report or trouble, they would hurry back to the main body. If there wasn't any trouble to report, they would wait at the campsite for the rest of the caravan to catch up. Normally, the caravan camped for the night a few miles from the next city they would stop at. The next morning, the leader of the caravan would ride with a few others to the city and get permission for the caravan to set up outside the city's walls. Once permission was granted, the caravan would move the last few miles to the city. Once they were set up, they would stay for 3 days or more, selling their goods and trading for what they needed. Few cities would ever deny permission to a caravan, Lupo said. The trade is important to them, and the cities often profit as much as we do. It made sense, and Alex could see why most cities would be happy to have the caravans arrive. They would be able to obtain things that they could not get anywhere else, and news from places they might never go. They would be entertained by the actors and acrobats that traveled with the caravan, and have a chance to see exotic animals that were uncommon in Midland, or everywhere else for that matter. Alex could see that Wayland's decision to join a caravan had been a good one. They could travel in safety, collecting news and rumors from far-off places, and not draw any attention to themselves.
That story Lupo was trying to tell at dinner time sounded familiar to me, Wayland said as he and Alex were preparing for bed.
Yes, well, Alex replied, unsure if Wayland was upset or just teasing him.
The part of the young adventurer seems to have grown since the last time I heard the tale,
Wayland went on with a slight smile. Lupo did add a few things in his telling, Alex said, relieved that Wayland was smiling.
What brought that story up, if you don't mind my asking?
Lupo thinks he would like to be an adventurer. When we stopped for lunch, he asked me to tell him a story about adventurers, you know, something I'd heard. The other men joined in, calling for a story, and, well, that one just came out.
No harm done, Wayland said, sitting down on his blankets. Still, you might be a little more careful in which stories you decide to tell. Stories about you, even if nobody knows they are about you, can be dangerous.
How so?
Hearing a story about you, or rather about a young adventurer who did so much, might bring you to mind. It could make certain people think about you and who you know and what you've done in the past. They might not connect you to that young adventurer, but it could make them think.
I see. I suppose that some people know about my connection to you as well. Some people might suspect that I'm helping you, if they were to hear a story about me, that is.
It's possible. I'm sure our enemies in the Brotherhood know a great deal more about you than you might think. They aren't fools, after all. They would want to know as much as possible about you, just in case.
I'll keep that in mind if I tell any more stories.
Now,
Wayland said, taking out his pipe.
I need you to tell me a story.
What story? Alex asked, surprised.
I need to know what happened in Nisa, and what, if anything, you've learned about our enemies.
Alex was silent for a few minutes, thinking about his last adventure, and deciding what was important and what wasn't. Wayland didn't hurry him and didn't ask questions as Alex told him everything. It took him a long time to explain everything that had happened and what he had discovered in Nisa. When he'd finished, Wayland sat with his eyes closed for several minutes, deep in thought.
It seems you have a dangerous enemy, Wayland finally said. I don't think we need to worry about Magnus at the moment, but this Galen person interests me. We will need to be careful of him, I think.
I don't think he's in charge of the Brotherhood, but I'm sure he's important, in the organization, I mean.
No, not in charge, but certainly in direct contact with the person who is in charge. If we could find and track Galen...
Waylon trailed off, but Alex didn't need him to go on. It was clear. If they could track Galen, then they could find the head of the Brotherhood. If they could find the head of the Brotherhood, they could put an end to the evil the Brotherhood was causing. Only one person was in charge of the Brotherhood, and that person was powerful enough to control the other members of the group. Other members that were, perhaps, throughout all the known lands. Alex didn't sleep much that night. His thoughts about the Brotherhood troubled him. When he was finally able to push those thoughts away, he tried to relax his mind and think more like a dragon, but he lay awake for a long time, and it was nearly sunrise before he allowed himself to rest and sleep. After breakfast, Lycan rode off with a few other members of the caravan to get permission to move closer to the city. Alex watched them right away and wasn't surprised when Lupo came looking for him.
"We have until midday at least," Lupo said. "I thought we might use some of that time to practice with the blunt swords."
"Will your father be angry?" Alex asked.
"This isn't dueling, this is training," Lupo laughed.
Alex agreed and was pleased to see that Lupo was not alone in his desire to learn. Several of the young men from the caravan came to watch them practice, and Alex made a point of getting them all involved. While it would have been easier to just teach Lupo, he thought that training them all might be more helpful. If they were attacked on the road, they would be better prepared to defend themselves and the caravan. When Lycan returned to their camp, Alex had several of the young men paired up and practicing with each other. He was walking around the group, observing their skills and making suggestions or demonstrating what they were doing wrong. Lycan sat on his horse watching for several minutes before riding over to them with a smile on his face.
"You could have waited until I could join in," Lycan said with a laugh.
"In the future we will," Alex said.
"No, it is better this way,"
Lycan said.
"I have many things to do and little time to learn new things."
"You should try to join us, Father," Lupo said, walking up beside Alex. "With a few months of this training, we will be ready for any enemy we might meet on the road."
"I doubt we will meet anything we cannot handle now," Lycan said, smiling down at his son. "Still, it is good to be prepared for anything, so I will try to join in when I can."
The afternoon was busy. Setting up tents and getting all of the wagons in place took a lot of work. By the time the evening meal was prepared, the caravan was almost ready to start trading with the city. It had been a long day for Alex, and he had not been able to relax his mind as much as he had hoped he would. That night, Alex spent some more time trying to think like a dragon, trying to understand everything Salinor had told him. Now and then, he thought he might be getting close to thinking like a dragon, but he was never sure. He might have been thinking like a dragon for a moment, but something would always distract him just as he was almost there. Dogs barking in the night, unknown noises from the city, even the sound of wild animals moving outside the camp. It seemed that the smallest thing would break into his thoughts, and Alex knew that he'd never think like a dragon if he couldn't keep his focus while allowing those things to happen around him. Everyone was up and moving early the next morning. There was much to be done before they started trading with the people in the city, and everyone had something to do. Alex helped Waylon set up their tables, asking questions about the goods Waylon had brought with them. Waylon explained everything in a low voice so that only Alex would hear what he was saying. Alex was supposed to be his apprentice, after all, and should have already known most of what Waylon was telling him. The company ate breakfast, and then Lycan gave the order to move some of the wagons. The wagons that were moved were the ones closest to the city gates, and had only been placed there to keep the people of the city out until everything was ready. Alex was surprised by how many people were already waiting outside the circle of wagons, and he guessed that it had been some time since a caravan had come this way. Alex worked with Waylon all morning, surprised by how good a salesman Waylon turned out to be. Waylon would call out to the people who passed, letting them know exactly what it was he had to sell. It didn't hurt that Waylon sold things at a good price and would often let people argue his prices down. Alex didn't think that Waylon was going to make any money on this journey, but then again, they hadn't come to Jaro to make money. They spent 4 days at this small city before the caravan prepared to move on. Once again, Alex would be riding ahead of the caravan, but this time the next city was 2 days away instead of one. They were still far south of any likely trouble, but Alex stayed alert for any signs of danger. He wasn't looking just for possible trouble for the caravan. He was looking for anything that might be trouble for Waylon and himself. So it went as the caravan moved north and a bit west along the ancient roads of Midland. They stopped at every city on the road, and they encountered no trouble. The crowds were always happy to see them, and to Alex's surprise, he was able to learn a great deal about what was happening in Midland and in Westland. It was a happy time for Alex, even as busy as he was. He continued to teach Lupo and the others how to use the sword, and was pleased that they all seemed to be learning quickly. He also continued to practice thinking like a dragon and working his dragon magic. He wouldn't do anything that would be noticed, but using only his dragon magic took more concentration than he'd thought it would. Two things continued to trouble him, however. He had to continue pretending to be something he wasn't, and Waylon. Waylon was talking less than usual, and he seemed to have something on his mind all the time. The old wizard looked tired, even early in the morning, and Alex wasn't sure that his friend was sleeping at all. Whenever Alex asked him, Waylon would smile and say it was nothing, but Alex knew that wasn't true. After almost 2 months of travel, Alex found something else to worry about. Riding ahead of the caravan, scouting their path as he often did with Lupo and several others, he noticed some unusual tracks. When he first saw them, he felt confused, but after a closer inspection, he was sure of what they were. "Goblins," Alex said, wiping dirt from his hands. 10 at least, maybe as many as 20 moving west."
"How can you be sure?" Lupo asked.
"These tracks were made by iron shoes," Alex said, following the tracks with his eyes. "Goblin soldiers either wear iron shoes or no shoes at all."
10 or 20 goblins won't bother the caravan," one of the men commented from his horse.
"You don't know that," another man said. "Goblins are fierce. They could be a danger to the caravan, maybe a danger to the nearby cities as well."
"If there really are only 10 or 20 goblins, the caravan should be able to handle them," Alex said, climbing back into his saddle. "But this could be a scouting party for a much larger force, or perhaps a small group of raiders."
"You think there are more of them?" Lupo asked.
"I don't know," Alex said, considering what he knew about goblins. "I don't think 20 goblins would be moving in country like this alone."
"But they're moving west, and our path lies to the north," Lupo said nervously.
"They were going west when they crossed the road," Alex corrected. "That was before dawn this morning. Where have they gone now?"
Lupo thought for a moment.
"Tonlar, ride back and tell my father what we found," he said. "Alex, you and I will follow these tracks to see if they change directions or meet others. The rest of you, continue along the road, but be careful."
The men all nodded, and Tonlar turned his horse around and headed back to the caravan. Alex smiled at Lupo and started off along the trail the goblins had left. If the tracks continued to the west, there would be little to worry about. But if they turned north, there could be trouble. For most of that afternoon, Alex and Lupo followed the goblin tracks, but they continued to move almost due west. No other tracks met the ones they were following, and Alex felt certain that the goblins had not joined with any others. Still, it was strange to see goblin tracks in Midland, and Alex felt unsettled the rest of the day. Later that night, when Waylon and Alex were alone, Waylon asked,
"You are certain they were goblins?"
"I know goblin tracks when I see them," Alex said.
"And you followed them west?"
Waylon said thoughtfully. "For more than 10 miles, Alex said, stretching his legs.
"A pity you didn't track them east as well,"
Waylon said, sitting down on his own blankets. "Why? They were moving west."
"This group was going west, but I wonder where they came from. I've never heard of goblins in Midland, and this news worries me. Goblins don't often cross seas to reach new lands, so I have to wonder where this group came from."
"You think Jabez has something to do with it?" Alex said, considering the possibilities.
"I'm certain of it. He is moving faster than I thought he would. Faster than I hoped he would."
"Moving toward what?"
"Open war, perhaps. I'm not sure what his plans are, but I'm sure he wants to control all of Jarrow before he's done."
"You believe the goblins are working for him? I didn't think goblins would serve a human."
"He's not just a human, but a wizard. And not just a wizard, but a dark wizard. They will serve him as long as they see some profit in it."
"Then perhaps we should move faster. I know you want to keep as quiet as you can and stay out of sight, but if Jabez is ready to declare open war..."
"Not yet,"
Waylon said, his voice soft.
"He's not ready yet. We still have time."
Alex didn't like Waylon's answer, but he didn't argue. Waylon knew what he was doing, and he had a strong magical connection to Jabez. If Waylon felt that Jabez wasn't ready for open war, then Alex felt certain that Waylon was right. Without saying anything more, Alex rolled into his blankets and went to sleep. The next day they moved north once more, stopping a few miles from the next city the caravan would visit. There were no more signs of goblins, and Alex hoped that there wouldn't be. He'd dealt with goblins before, and he knew how dangerous they could be. He thought about changing his sword, putting away the fine blade that Mr. Blackburn had sold him, and replacing it with Moonslayer, his own magic sword. He knew the goblins would be afraid of his magic sword, and that fear alone might be enough to save the caravan if they ran into trouble. But he also knew that using Moonslayer would call unwanted attention to his and Wayland's quest. Happily for Alex, there was no news of goblins in or around the city they arrived at the next day. The days turned into weeks, and after 3 weeks and 5 more cities, Alex had almost forgotten the goblin tracks he had found. The caravan was almost as far north as they would go, approaching the sea. When they came to the sea, they would turn due west and move across the northern part of Midland before starting south once more. Alex knew he and Waylon would be leaving the caravan soon and starting off for Westland. He was sad to leave the caravan. He had enjoyed it more than he'd thought he would. He had made a great many friends in the company, and it would be hard to say goodbye to them all. Waylon, Alex noticed, was still quiet and unhappy, though he still said that nothing was wrong. Alex knew something was very wrong, and that Waylon was keeping it from him so he wouldn't worry. Alex also noticed that Waylon, apart from just looking worn and tired, now and then seemed a little confused. Waylon had always been alert and full of energy, and the change troubled Alex more and more. He kept a close watch on his friend, hoping that Waylon was just worried about what lay ahead. Chapter 9. The Empty Village. The caravan approached the village of Welding. It was a small village, but it was important to all the caravans that traveled this way. Welding was on the coast, and also where the main road split. One road went north, and caravans crossing Midland to the north would follow it. Alex and Wayland's caravan would take the other road, called the Lower Crossing. The Lower Crossing was considered safer to travel, as it never entered the wilder bandit-filled lands of the far north. Welding was different from most other villages for another reason. Every caravan along this route would stop for the night there, even though it was a small village and not really a place for trade. But oftentimes goods were shipped to the harbor at Welding and would be waiting for the caravan to arrive. Occasionally goods from the caravan would be sent by ship south from Welding as well. Lupo told Alex all about Welding and that there were three other villages just like it, forming a kind of square around what might be called the corners of Midland. It wasn't yet noon when Alex and the other scouts arrived at the edge of a small wood. Here the road turned toward the sea, dropping down into a shallow valley where the village stood. Alex was in front, leading the group. A quick look at the village in the valley told Alex that something was wrong. He held up his hand so the others would stop before they all rode out of the trees. He didn't know exactly what was wrong, but he thought it best not to have them out in the open where they would be seen. "What's the matter?" Lupo asked, riding up beside Alex.
"The village," Alex said. "It's not right."
"It looks the same as it did last time we were here," Lupo said without concern.
"I don't see any people," Alex said, "and there's no smoke from cooking fires."
Lupo looked down at the village without saying anything. His face had become stern, and his eyes searched the valley and village for any sign of life. After more than a minute of looking and not seeing anything at all, Lupo turned to the rest of the scouts.
"Be ready for anything," Lupo said. "Spread out on the road and leave some space between each other. If this is a trap, let's not make it easy for anyone to catch us all."
The others understood what Lupo was saying, and with a nod, Lupo and Alex started forward. Alex heard the men behind him checking their weapons, but he wasn't sure weapons would be needed. If this was a trap, the important thing was that at least one of them got away to warn the caravan. He kept his eyes moving, searching for anything that was out of place. His mind started plotting, and he couldn't help thinking that if this was a trap, the wooded area they had just ridden through would be the best place for attackers to hide. There was no movement in the village as they approached, and the only sound was a slight breeze blowing in from the sea. It wasn't until he and Lupo had ridden to the edge of the village that they saw the first sign of trouble. A body was lying in a ditch at the side of the road, and from the look of him, Alex guessed the man had been dead for 3 or 4 days. Lupo motioned with his hand, and the other scouts closed in around him. They all saw the body, but they didn't speak. Alex let his magic reach out, looking for any signs of life in the village, hoping that things weren't as bad as he feared. There was nothing for his magic to find, or at least nothing living. The village was empty.
"Gareth, ride back and tell my father what we found," Lupo ordered. "John, Eric, Parlacia is the nearest city along the north road, half a day's hard ride at least. Make the best time you can and let them know as well. Be careful."
"And the rest of us?"
a man named Walsh asked.
"We'll search the village for any survivors,"
Lupo answered, desperate hope in his voice.
"Use caution. If there are survivors, they might fear us or even attack us."
"And if there are no survivors?"
Walsh asked in a troubled voice.
"Then we'll start digging graves," Lupo answered.
Gareth rode off at top speed, wanting to bring Lycan and the caravan forward as quickly as possible. John and Eric moved at a solid gallop, but Alex knew that however fast they reached the city, it would be at least a day before any help came from there. Alex and the rest of the group moved into the village quietly, nervous and afraid of what they might find. Alex, Lupo, and the three remaining members of their group stayed close together. With a great deal of caution, they searched every building from top to bottom. They found a dozen more bodies, and Alex made a note that all were men, and they all looked to be between the ages of 18 and maybe 40 years old. There were no women, no children, and no old people. A small hope blossomed in Alex's mind. Perhaps the women and children had somehow escaped. The hope didn't last long as he helped to carry 13 dead men to the small cemetery just north of the village, and realized that if there were no dead women or children, it had to be because whoever had done this wanted the women and children alive. Alex's mind started looking for answers, and he didn't like any of the answers his brain came up with. He tried and failed to push the dark thoughts away and started digging. The work of digging graves didn't force his dark thoughts away, but it did help him to focus his mind. It was possible, he reasoned, that most of the villagers could have escaped. They might have seen this trouble coming and fled, leaving behind only a few men to try to defend their village. If that is the case, where are they now? Alex's Ogash asked. Once the trouble was over, they would have returned to their village. They would have at least buried their own dead. Alex didn't have any answers. He turned the problem over in his mind, trying to find some way that the villagers might have escaped. Escaped and not returned to bury their dead. Something evil had happened here, and Alex was already thinking that Jabez was involved. But why Jabez would do something like this, Alex had no idea at all. What do you think happened here? Alex finally asked Lupo as they took a break from digging. Pirates, Lupo answered without hesitation. They often raid small villages and towns near the coast. They can get supplies, and sometimes they get a few men who are willing to join them. You say this happens often? Alex asked. Well, not that often, Lupo said. Raiding towns and villages can cause trouble once word gets out. Ships are warned, as are all the other towns and villages along the coast, and at least those nearby will be on guard. This, however, is strange. Strange how? Alex asked, already suspecting the answer. So many dead. Pirates don't often kill, at least not when they raid a village or town. They may kill one or two people if they have to, but we've found 13 bodies. That seems like a lot for a small village like Welding. And we've found no survivors. Yes, that as well. Pirates will sometimes resort to kidnapping. They will hold a person, or perhaps a family, for ransom if they think they can get a good price for them. But an entire village? No, I've never heard of that. If they took the entire village, who would be left to pay the ransom? It doesn't make any kind of sense. They didn't say any more as they went back to digging. Alex could see that Lupo was as troubled as he was about what they had found and what they had not found. Alex thought Lupo was right about the ransom idea. If pirates had taken everyone in the village, hoping to get paid for their return, who would pay? If the caravan hadn't been traveling this way, who would even know that the village was missing? Someone would find out, sooner or later, Alex's Ogash said. Later might be what the attackers hoped for, Alex answered. Alex paused in his digging to look at the village. The village was mostly made up of houses and only had two or three public buildings. There were several large warehouses near the harbor, but they were separated from the village by 100 feet of open ground. Alex guessed that at least 100 to 150 people had lived here. With only 13 dead, that would leave a minimum of 87. Far too many to take them all away on a single ship. Alex's thoughts were interrupted by trumpets suddenly sounding from the hill to the north of the village. A large number of armed men on horseback came sweeping into the valley. Alex and the others stopped their work, gathering together once more. Lupo moved forward, holding up his open right hand as a sign of peace. Most of the riders moved through the village and down to the warehouses and harbor area. A dozen men quickly encircled Lupo and the others. They looked to be soldiers, and their movements were well ordered. They didn't say anything for a minute or more, just looking at Alex and his companions. Finally, the man who appeared to be in command lifted his own right hand as Lupo had done.
"I see our comrades didn't have far to go before they found you," Lupo said.
"Not far," the commander answered. "I am Tiamor. Who are you, and why have you come here?"
"I am Lupo. We are scouts for the caravan of my father, Lycan of Tressland. We are traveling north, though we mean to take the lower crossing to the west."
"So your messengers have told us,"
Tiamor said, lowering his hand.
"How long before your caravan will arrive?"
"They should be here before the sun sets," Lupo said.
"They will be welcome and considered friends, as are you all," Tiamor answered. "In evil times it is good to meet men of honor like yourselves."
"Our honor is in our deeds, in our words, and in our lives," Lupo said.
Alex looked at Lupo. His words seemed to be memorized, some code or special ceremony that Alex didn't know anything about. It was the right thing to say, and it rang true, but Alex was slightly concerned. Waylon hadn't mentioned anything about special words or codes when meeting with soldiers or even armed men. Did Waylon know about this and had simply forgotten to mention it? Or was this something Waylon knew nothing about? The moment passed, and Alex hoped he would have time to ask Lupo about the words he had said. The soldiers took over the work of digging graves, and Alex and his companions were invited to join the commander for the midday meal. Once things were in order and Alex and the others had taken their places, Tiamor told them what had happened in the village, or at least what he knew. The villagers kept watch on the harbor, and they had seen the raiding ship long before it came to their small port. This was not the first time that pirates had come looking for supplies and water. Most of the people from the village had gone into the hills to the north, while 30 of the men had remained behind. It was almost a custom here in Welding for the men to bargain with the pirates, trading with them so they could get what they needed without causing any real trouble for the village.
"Such things have happened so often in the past that the villagers were not troubled or afraid," Tiamor said. "I fear that will change in the future."
Things seemed to be going as they should, as they had many times in the past, but then something went wrong. The pirates had suddenly attacked. The people in the hills had seen them when they started killing the men of the village. Fear had filled them, and without waiting to see what the pirates would do, they had fled.
"They came to Palacia 3 nights ago, and if things had been ready as they should have..."
Tiamor shook his head.
"We should have been here sooner, and in future we will be."
"This has happened to other villages?"
Lupo asked, seeing the look on Tiamor's face.
"Not to any nearby," Tiamor answered, "but word has come of similar things happening in the far north and the west. We should have expected something to happen close, but it is hard to imagine evils close to home when stories come from far away."
"Nobody wants to believe evil stories, but all too often they're true,"
Alex said, more to himself than to anyone else.
"Yes," Tiamor agreed, "and there are other stories you should hear. Stories of dangers on the inland roads. I doubt that a full caravan will find any trouble, but your scouts or anyone wandering too far off might."
"What stories?" Lupo asked, concerned.
"I will speak to your father when he arrives," Tiamor answered. "Bandits have long been a problem in the north, as I'm sure you know. It seems that, of late, they have moved farther south as well."
"I'm sure my father will welcome any information you can share," Lupo said.
The caravan appeared well before sunset.
Lycan, hearing the news of what had happened in Welding, had hurried them forward. The men of the caravan were well armed and alert when they came rolling into the valley, but there was no need. Lycan was quick to discover all that had happened, and after only a few minutes of putting the caravan in order, he went off with Tiamor to talk privately. Alex wanted to have a private talk with Waylon, but with all the commotion of the caravan's arrival and getting set up for the night, he wasn't able to. Finally, after taking care of his assigned duties, Alex walked toward the harbor alone. He wanted to think. He was looking for answers about what had happened here and why. Most of all, he was worried about the future and the adventure that he and Waylon were on. He was sitting at the end of the dock, looking out at the darkening sea, when Lupo came looking for him.
"You seem troubled," Lupo said softly. "I understand that what happened here wasn't pleasant, but you seem to be taking it harder than you should."
"And how hard should I take it?" Alex asked.
"Well, I..."
Lupo started and stopped.
"I just mean that... well..."
"What?" Alex asked. "Speak your mind. I won't be offended."
"Today was bad, I know that. Still, it seems to me that you've been in a dark mood for many days now, and the further north we've traveled, the darker your mood seems to get," Lupo said. "It's like you're waiting for something you hope will not come."
"Are my thoughts so open to you?" Alex asked in surprise. Alex thought that he had been hiding his feelings. He believed that his concerns about the future, about Waylon, and about his eventual meeting with Jabez were known only to himself.
"You don't hide your worries as easily as you think," Lupo answered. "I don't know what your troubles are, but I can see them in your face. I can hear the echo of them and the laughter you use to hide them."
"Today was bad, but it is not the cause of my troubles. It is the future that worries me. A future that I cannot see or even guess at."
"Only an oracle can see the future, and even they cannot see all. Don't let the unknown drag you down in worry. Look to the future with hope."
"I have hope. It's just that you're thinking of adventure. I suspect that since I told you of my dream to become an adventurer, you've had some thoughts about your own future as a merchant." Alex was surprised by Lupo's guess. It wasn't what he had expected his friend to say, and it missed the truth completely. Still, he couldn't tell Lupo what was really bothering him, and the thought of becoming an adventurer was as good a cover story as anything. "Being a merchant seems a dull life," Alex said.
"I wish I had some idea of what my future holds."
"I thought as much. Perhaps I can help you." "Have you become an oracle, able to predict my fate?" Alex joked.
"Nothing as grand as that. I do, however, know of something that might help. It is a place we will pass as we travel to the west, a place that many people claim is magical."
"What place is that?" Alex asked, interested.
"A cave. There are some who claim that if you sleep in this magical cave, you will have visions of your future."
"Some who claim," Alex repeated. "Do you make this claim? Have you slept in this cave?"
"I've promised not to name those I know who believe, and I know that the cave doesn't bring visions to everyone."
"You've tried it yourself, haven't you?"
"The last time we passed this way," Lupo admitted, "I had no visions or dreams. Still, those who claim to have seen their future seem happier for it. Perhaps you will have the dreams and find the answers you seek."
"I don't suppose there is any harm in trying," Alex said, his mind catching on a new hope. If such a place as this magical cave was along their path, it might be useful for his current quest. He didn't know if he would find any answers, but there was a chance that he might.
"It's at least 10 days before we get there. The cave is hard to find, but I'd be willing to guide you if you want to try it,"
Alex agreed, even though his reasons why were not what Lupo thought. Lupo seemed happy to have helped his friend, and that helped Alex feel happy as well. Later that night, when most of the caravan had gone to sleep, Alex had a chance to talk with Waylon. At first, the old wizard simply listened to what Alex had to say and his thoughts about what had happened at Welding. Alex still thought that Jabez was somehow involved, but he still hadn't determined how. "It's just a small village, and far away from the land Jabez is trying to control," Alex said. "I don't see why he would care about such a place."
"Of course he cares about this place," Waylon answered, as if it was all perfectly clear. "You're not thinking like an evil wizard, Alex. You're not thinking of how the Brotherhood works and gains power."
"What do you mean?"
"You were in Nisa, and you saw how things were done there. Lies, rumors, mistrust, those are the weapons of the Brotherhood. That is how they divide people, make them afraid and unsure of who they can trust."
"That's true. Still, the east side of Midland is a long way from Westland. Why would Jabez already be spreading his lies and rumors here?"
"It's never too soon to spread the seeds of doubt. Never too early to kindle the fires of fear that he will use to his advantage later. I have no doubt that Jabez is behind this trouble, and a great deal more, unless I miss my guess."
"Is there nothing we can do? Can't we at least warn people about what Jabez is up to?"
"Who would we warn? Who would believe us? As you said, Westland is far away. The troubles there are not the troubles of Midland. Few in Midland would believe any such warning of a coming evil, and those who might believe us are not in a position to do anything about it."
"Then I suppose all we can do is go on as we are, and reach Westland as soon as possible," Alex said with a sigh.
"If we achieve that, then we will be able to do more," Waylon said.
Chapter 10. Cave of Dreams. The days passed slowly as the caravan moved away from the village of Welding. There was sadness for what had happened in the village, and fear had touched all of their hearts. If such things could happen in Welding, what other evils might already be spreading over the land? Alex could see that Waylon was right, and that this was exactly what Jabez and the Brotherhood wanted. Spreading fear and worry was the whole reason Welding had been attacked, and the plan was working.
"There's nothing we can do about it right now," Waylon said, "but it might be turned to good before the end."
"How could something so evil be turned to good?" Alex asked.
"It will wake people up, make them more aware of the trouble that is coming. Yes, it will make them less trustful of strangers, but it may, I hope, make them more watchful as well."
"And people who are watchful will make it harder for Jabez and his minions to do more harm."
"We can hope so."
Hope. Hope was all Alex had right now. They were still moving slowly toward Westland, and there wasn't much he could actually do to fight the growing darkness. Jabez remained free to act as he wished, a fact that troubled Alex more and more as the days passed. It seemed unfair. Jabez should be afraid. He should be the one taking care and worrying about the future. "He must know that Waylon is on his way," Alex said to himself.
"Perhaps he does not care," Alex's Ogash answered. "Perhaps he does not fear Waylon Vankin at all."
Alex thought about that. It would be incredibly foolish of Jabez to not at least account for Waylon's opposition to his plans. Jabez couldn't be that foolish, and the Brotherhood would not be that foolish. But what did that mean for Alex and Waylon?
"He is taunting you, trying to draw Waylon out before his plans are ready," his Ogash said. "If Jabez can get Waylon to act before he is fully prepared, that would gain him and whoever is with him a great advantage."
"So Waylon must not act too soon," Alex said softly. I must help him to wait until we are ready.
Alex knew what he said was true, but he didn't like it. Waiting was always hard for him, and waiting while other people were being hurt was harder still. Waylon seemed ready and willing to wait, but now Alex understood how much this slow approach to Westland troubled his friend. Waylon knew that this was his and Alex's best chance for success, and he was determined to follow it, whatever the cost. Looking at Waylon's face, Alex noticed again how tired his friend looked. It was more than just the long journey. Alex suspected Jabez was constantly trying to find a way into Waylon's mind, to discover where he was and what he was up to. That would have been bad enough, but Waylon's own worries were also written in the lines of his face, worries about what Jabez was doing, what harm would come if he moved too slowly or too quickly, and worries about what the future held. It was almost too much to think about, and Alex's respect for Waylon grew. To carry all of the troubles and worries that he had and still move forward was an incredible act of courage. 13 days after leaving Welding behind, the caravan came to the place where Alex hoped to find some answers. They were in a shallow valley with a small river that ran to the northeast. The land to the north rose slowly to distant mountains, and south of their camp there were several tall hills. Lupo had pointed to the hills when the caravan had stopped, letting Alex know that the Cave of Dreams was close. As the sun sank in the west, Lupo and Alex rode away from the camp. Alex was surprised to see half a dozen other men following a short distance behind them. He thought his visit to the cave was a secret, and he turned to Lupo for answers.
"I told my father that you wished to visit the cave," Lupo said. "With all the rumors of trouble on the road, he sent a few extra men to watch just in case."
Alex nodded and rode on without comment. He knew Lycan and Tiamor had spoken together at Welding, and the news was that the bandits of the north were more active than they had been for many years, and many smaller groups had found trouble or simply disappeared as they traveled. Lycan had hinted that something worse than bandits might be lurking within the wild lands between the northern cities, but what this new danger was, no one could say.
"I am grateful your father is allowing us to go to the cave at all," Alex said as he and Lupo started climbing the hill where the cave would be found.
"He is worried, of course," Lupo replied, "but the Cave of Dreams is well known in our caravan. Many people seek to learn their future here, and he would not stand in your way. He would only stop us from coming if there is a definite threat to the caravan, or if he thought we would be in too much danger."
Seeking knowledge about the future might be more dangerous than rumors of bandits. People feared oracles because of what they might say, and magical places like this cave might be worse. Oracles would try to bring peace of mind with their predictions, but that wasn't true from magical places. If the cave worked, if Alex was lucky enough to have a dream or a vision, it would show him truth. But it might not be easy to understand. An oracle might at least try to explain their predictions, but this cave would explain nothing.
"Here," Lupo said, stopping his horse and climbing out of the saddle. "Here is the path you must follow." "I can go no further."
Alex climbed off his horse and looked up the well-used but slightly overgrown path ahead of him. A chill ran through him, and he felt strangely reluctant to follow the path alone. He unsaddled his horse and picked up the bundle he'd prepared to take with him. Most of it was firewood, but there were also a few small tokens he'd gathered from people in the caravan. He'd been told to leave these items at a small shrine in the cave as an offering of thanks or as a wish for luck.
"I suppose I should go," Alex said. "If there's any trouble, call out. I may hear you and be able to help."
"If there's any trouble, it will be yours.
and I will not be able to help you in any way," Lupo answered.
Alex nodded and started up the path. Lupo was right, of course. Alex was far more likely to find trouble here than Lupo and the others were. His reluctance to follow the path grew stronger as darkness started to close in around him, but he shook it off and continued to climb. The path was steeper and more difficult than it had looked. Alex climbed for a long time before he suddenly came to a wide, flat space on the hillside. Ahead of him was a dark opening, much darker than the night that had fallen around him. He moved forward, pausing to look around at the entrance of the cave, and then conjured a faint weir light to guide him into the darkness. Waylon might not have approved of the weir light, but Alex didn't think such small magic would be noticed. There was also the fact that he couldn't see anything inside the cave, and he needed some form of light if he didn't want to wander in blindly. The cave, Alex discovered, was not deep. It went straight into the hillside for 8 or 9 yards and ended at a small altar with a deep fire pit just in front of it. The altar was covered with small trinkets like the ones Alex had brought with him. The cave and the altar didn't surprise Alex, but the slight tingly feeling he had as he entered did. He mostly felt the tingling in his hands and feet, and he recognized it as the same feeling he'd had the times he had visited an oracle. Undoing his bundle, Alex started a small fire in the pit, and then sat back and looked at the altar in front of him. From the look of some of the tokens he could see, this place had obviously been in use for many, many years. He placed his own small gifts carefully among the others. He added a few sticks of wood to his fire, and then leaned back against the cave wall and waited. He had no idea how the magic of this cave worked, or even if it would work for him. At first he was eager and hopeful, but nothing seemed to happen. He wondered if he should speak, possibly to call for the magic of this place to help him, but it didn't seem right. After a time, he built up his fire again. He sat and waited and watched the flames of his fire, and slowly, without really noticing, he fell asleep. A roar and the sudden light of flames filled Alex with fear. He jumped to his feet and rushed forward, and then he realized he was no longer in the cave. It took a minute for his brain to catch up, but he soon knew that he was in a dream. The magic of the cave was working. He looked around, and the darkness melted away. He was standing on open grassland, and it was dark. Howls from wolves were all around him, but no, that wasn't right. It wasn't wolves, exactly, and there was language in those howls. Words in some evil, twisted language that Alex did not recognize. The sound of running feet and frightened shouts filled the air, and Alex was no longer alone. The caravan was under attack, and as Alex tried to move to help defend it, he found himself bound and unable to do anything. Alex closed his eyes for a second, and when he opened them again, he was standing in front of a small, young dragon that was golden in color. He was in an enclosed room filled with treasure, and again, things didn't seem right. He thought for a moment that this was the dragon's lair,